This week's episode is sponsored by Spaces. Spaces is a new platform backed by 15 plus years of educator feedback designed to document the process and progress behind student learning in your classroom. Join the Spaces community to connect with educators across North America and gain access to free teacher-created resources, help educators who are just starting out on their journey, and learn new things from teachers who have been there before. So visit community.spacesedu.com today.
Is this the teacher hotline?
Hello, everyone. My name is Ronald Hay, and I am the host of the Teacher Hotline. Welcome back to another episode where we try to answer some of the most pressing questions for teachers in and outside of the classroom. Today, we have Charlie from the Halton District School Board. Charlie, how can we help you today?
Hey, what's up, Ron? So I know this is a bit of a stretch, but I was wondering if you had any contacts in HR to have on your podcast. As a new teacher, I'd love to get a bit more insight into what HR is actually looking for in a job application. Do things like buzzwords actually matter, or is it more about your experience? I'd also love to hear more about what to do if you actually get an interview. What exactly are they looking for in that initial interview? Any help you could provide would be great. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you so much, Charlie. That is a great question. Sending in resumes to a school board is never a fun thing to do. You have no idea exactly what they're looking for. And to be honest with you, it kind of feels like you're playing the lottery sometimes. And if you're lucky to be even called in for a job interview, now you have to actually figure out what are you going to say to lock down that job. So for those of you who lined up an interview or about to submit a job application, let's try to put some of those fears to ease. So today I bring in Majella Hilson, our Chief People Officer at Appleby College. Majella has been around at Appleby for 17 years now, and Majella and her team has been a vital part of the school in supporting faculty and staff getting through the pandemic. So before we even get started, I just want to say, Majella, thank you so much for all your hard work over the last couple of years, and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Ron. Wow, what a lovely welcome. Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here. It's been a few times that I've been trying to get on to your show, and so I'm happy we finally made it.
We're here, Majella. We are here. I know we don't have too much time. 30 minutes just goes by too quickly. But this has been a popular episode that people have been requesting for a while now. As you can imagine, the whole job application process and the interview process, doesn't matter where you're applying to, it just conjures up a lot of anxiety and nerves. And there's just so much mystery behind the whole process. So today we just want to talk to you and kind of peek behind the curtain and just see what some of the HR departments around the world, including yourself, are thinking about and looking for during that whole process. So why don't we start with the beginning stages of the whole job application, the dreaded resume. Doesn't matter what your job you're applying for, everyone needs to write a resume. So from someone from you with so much experience in reading hundreds and thousands of these things, from your perspective, what makes a strong resume? Is it the experience? Is it the buzzwords, the writing, the grammar? How do you filter through so many of these things?
Yeah, so Ron, great question. The resume is very important. You're absolutely right. And to answer your question very simply, first of all, yes, to all of that, writing, grammar, what you put, the buzzwords are all very important to a resume. I will say a resume is a formal document, and it's that way of giving the recruiter, a window into who you are, and paired with a cover letter, it really demonstrates your abilities, how to convince that recruiter that you're qualified and you're hireable, really. So what do you want to put in a resume? We can talk about that. Shall we talk about some of that?
Please, absolutely. Love to get into the nitty gritty of that.
Absolutely. So in terms of a resume, I would say most importantly, layout is important. We like to see that reverse chronological order come through. And the reason for that is it makes your resume really easy for the recruiter to scan through very quickly if you use that reverse chronological. And reverse chronological meaning that you start with your most recent job and then you put the one that you did 5 or 10 years ago at the bottom. You want the recruiter to see what's best right up front. I would also make sure that all your contact information is correct. You'd be surprised to know sometimes people will missing a digit on their cell phone. So those are important. I would also suggest making sure you use a professional email address. You'd be surprised with some of the email addresses that people will have. If you're applying for a professional job, you want to make sure you have that professional email address.
You're saying that I should get rid of my email scrawnyronnie@hotmail.com then?
That's the one you do not want to use. Keep that for your friend. You want to think about how much you use bold, italic, and underlining. You want to have some consistency in that. And I would say one of the most important things to do, and a lot of people do not do this, I would say this is the one takeaway if you want to have one, is to make sure you read the posting and you mirror your resume accordingly. And you would do that by looking for the keywords in the posting. So what you want to get to know that posting. If you're applying for a job, what are they asking for? What are they looking for? You know, you want to make sure you then use some really good creative, because your resume is a page, maybe two pages. So you want it to be really eye-catching. So I would really emphasize using action verbs. So instead of saying managed, maybe say orchestrated. Instead of saying communicated, you want to say, you know, conveyed, advised, you know, presented, persuaded, consulted. Those are the words that are going to be eye-catching. And when that recruiter is scanning the resume, those words are going to really pop on your resume.
I want to go back to one of the first points you made about the resume, about going in reverse chronological order. Is there a rule of thumb or maybe just your own personal preference in terms of like how far back you go? Like, for instance, maybe you're a new grad from, I don't know, teacher's college. This is your first job. Like, you know, is it even relevant putting awards that maybe you won in high school, or like how far back, or does it matter? Experience is experience.
Yeah, great question. So I would not go back way, way back to your, you know, summer camp jobs unless it's relevant to what you're doing. Or, you know, if you worked in the construction industry and yet now you're in teaching. So you want to maybe emphasize all the teaching and maybe the clubs. That's another thing. The extracurricular, you want to emphasize all of those hobbies, those interests that you have, because those are great for teaching jobs, especially independent schools like Appleby. We look for those. We look for those hobbies. If you're, you know, if you're a chess player or you played on a, you know, amateur soccer team, we want to know that. But to come back to your question on how far back, I would go back to what's relevant, but don't feel like you have to put your jobs at Baskin Robbins that you did as a teenager or, you know, you want to keep it clean and you want to make it pop, and you don't want it to be three pages if you've just graduated from high school, if you've from teacher's college, where, you know, that's far too long of a resume to submit.
You know, I'm glad that you brought that point up, actually. In business school, when I was going through, it was a very hard one page resume. And they said anything over, you know, one page, HR is going to throw it in the garbage. And I remember going to teacher's college at OASI, and our profs were saying, you know what, in this profession, you know, two pages is reasonable. And I was so torn, I didn't know who to listen to. So from your perspective in this industry, you know, one page, two page, three pager, is there anything acceptable, or does it depend on, you know, the school or the school board?
Yeah. I mean, I'll just give it to you how we it depends on the role. It really does. And you're right. Teaching professions, we're looking for a little bit more. So I could see two pages. I would say a one-page resume, you know, that's focused, concise. It's focused, it's concise, it's uncomplicated. And those are mostly for entry-level or I would say mid-level professional positions. But for teaching, I could see a two-pager because you want to really highlight those robust experiences and achievements you have, you know, and those are more suitable for a teaching profession. When you go to three pages, I think you've sort of it's outside of what we're looking at, and you're going to lose that recruiter when they're scanning. I would highly suggest keeping it to two. Three pages is more for, you know, high level executive positions and even some academic positions, I would say in the university level roles or engineering, those types of positions. But I think when you're applying to teaching roles, I think two pages is adequate.
My other question is that, and I sort of alluded to it earlier, you know, especially at a school like Appleby, where everyone's always constantly applying to all these roles, heck, even the school boards too, when I think about how many teachers are out there applying for jobs. Like there must be an efficient way for HR to kind of screen through some of these resumes, especially the weak ones, the automatically. There's no way we're even looking further into this. Like what are some absolute, you know, 101s do not do on a resume where we look at it and we're like, we're chucking this in the garbage. Like what are some things that people just can't do on a resume?
Well, if you're applying for a teaching job, you better not have grammar or spelling mistakes on your resume or your cover letter. You need to make sure you proofread that resume. And I think where people get lost and it's when they're too long or there's not, and I spoke about that earlier, you want some white space on that resume, or you make the mistake of addressing, to another school, but you're applying to Appleby College because you can tell they've done that form, you know, and they've just changing the names of the school, and you have to really pay attention. And that's why I said, the key to getting your resume on the desk of that hiring manager is really reviewing the posting and pulling out the accountabilities, the competencies that they're looking for. You know, get to know that posting really well. And I'm not saying mirror or you know, tell what's not true, but obviously you can look at what's on that posting and add based on the skills that you do have and your capabilities, add what you bring, and that'll get you to the top of the pile for sure, is using those keywords. Because a lot of recruiters will use applicant tracking systems, ATS, and those systems, they're relying, especially if it's a position that we're expecting a lot of applicants, it's a system that's going to be looking for those buzzwords.
Now, a lot of new teachers, I hear this quite often, is they feel like they're at a disadvantage because they lack the experience, teaching experience that maybe veteran teachers might have on their resume. And, you know, it's always that, I actually see this in job postings sometimes. They'll say minimum, you know, 5 years of teaching experience. Well, it's like, well, you know, how do I get the experience if you're not giving me the experience? So what can new teachers do to stand out on their resumes to perhaps beat out some of those more experienced teachers that have been doing this for 10, 15 years?
Yeah, absolutely. So two questions. It's almost a two-part question there. I want to answer a part of what you asked. That whole experience things, what we're seeing and what we're asking more of now is not to put the years of experience. We're sort of eliminating that from our postings. And we haven't done that for everyone, but we're starting to remove that. And I think more organizations are starting to do that because people bring experience in so many different ways. But actually so that's one piece. So, you know, while some organizations are asking for 2 or 3 years or even 5 or 10 years experience, it's not always. I if you've got some good background or if you've got experience, like I said, in camps or something in a related field, that can be something that you can manipulate in your resume to show that you've got some of those competencies that are transferable into teaching. So that's one piece. So what can new teachers do? And I don't feel they're disadvantaged. Actually, at Appleby, we love new teachers. We're seeking them out. We want new teachers. And I think other independent schools are are similar. We, you know, we attend career fairs. We do our best to attract new teachers. We are even doing, you know, the bachelor, connecting with Bachelor of Education schools to have teacher placements here at Appleby. We've done, just this last year, coming out of COVID, we've done about 10 or 15 positions that we placed here. And it's a great way for new teachers to get that experience of mentoring and working with us, with a seasoned teacher, and learning about how we utilize technology and exposure to curriculum development, all of that. So we actually welcome new teachers. I can give you some suggestions as well if you're a new teacher in terms of looking for opportunities in the independent school worlds. I would highly recommend that new teachers connect with the Conference of Independent Schools. They have a website that cisontario.ca. And the CIS, the Conference of Independent Schools, works closely with many of the independent schools and, you know, just to provide opportunities for collaboration with teachers. And we rely on them for a lot of information as well. And they will post positions on their website, which is fantastic. So if we have a position available at Appleby, it's posted on the CIS website. So creating those networks, I think, is important. I think for a new teacher, you know, you really need to tell your story and your resume and your cover letter. And that's where a cover letter really comes in handy. You've got to make sure you utilize your cover letter to tell your story. And I would also make sure you update your LinkedIn profile. Those are important pieces to make sure that you get noticed.
Yeah, I want to expand on some of those points. You bring up the LinkedIn piece and the cover letter piece as well. Let's start with the cover letter piece. I was very fortunate that, you know, in business school, we actually had a whole course talking about resume writing and cover letter writing. And we had someone walk us through how to write a proper cover letter. But your traditional arts program, engineering program, math program won't really, you know, have a guidance department that teaches you that stuff. So I know there's obviously lots of points to talk about, but in high level, what's really the difference between a cover letter and a resume? Like, what is the cover letter trying to accomplish here?
Yeah, so you're right. You're absolutely right. You know, when you submit a resume and you don't submit a cover letter, we're only seeing half of you. We're not seeing that drive, that interest, that commitment. It's you submitted your resume. A cover letter is a personal piece that's tied to your resume. And it is very important because it shows that your excitement for the role, it shows your confidence. And you want to create a tone on your cover letter that's, you know, that friendly and forward. You want to catch that recruiter's eye. And what you ask, what is accomplished? Well, you know, you get to address the position directly. You get to explain who you are. You know, and by explaining your personal traits, your personality traits, you can really show how you can benefit the school. You know, it shows that you're prepared. You're a prepared candidate. You took the time to write the letter. It shows that you really want the job because you're expressing why you're interested in the role. It gives you an opportunity to highlight your competencies, which is so important. And it gives you an opportunity to show the recruiter, you know, what you bring to the school and how you can move the school forward. Otherwise, you're a resume that you're looking at with hundreds of others that you're competing with. So the cover letter is very important for that personal touch.
The second piece I want to bring up that you alluded to was the LinkedIn page. I know that Appleby in recent years have utilized LinkedIn a little bit more. I think I even saw like job postings where it says, oh, you can apply via LinkedIn. Would you say LinkedIn is more of a nice to have or a need to have nowadays for teachers?
I think it's important to have a LinkedIn. If you're a teacher, you should, I think for sure, absolutely have a LinkedIn profile. Because one, it increases your visibility. when we're, if there's a position that we need to recruit quickly on, and we know the posting is going to take us too long, we will do a search on LinkedIn because we have an account with LinkedIn as an employer. And we will make sure to, you know, do a scan of resumes. So you're losing out on that opportunity of a recruiter, you know, giving you that phone call to see if you're interested in a position. It's also a great way for teachers to network, to connect with other educators. You know, and share your you know, education related questions. It gives you an opportunity to make connections that and opportunities for jobs that you may not even know that you're interested in because people are reaching out to you. And another great thing, I think, why all teachers should have a LinkedIn account, because not all of them do. More and more are starting to, but another one is it gives you an opportunity to in real time show your accomplishments. So it's a, you know, the LinkedIn, like a resume, is a living document. It's constantly being updated with certifications or you know, courses that you've taken. And it really encourages you to keep that up to date, that professional development that you're doing, and keep it up to date. So it's I would absolutely highly recommend all teachers create a LinkedIn account.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny actually how many teachers don't have one. Like, you know, as I'm doing this podcast and I'm trying to advertise for some of these episodes and I try to tag some of the teachers, I'm like, oh my God, you guys don't even have a LinkedIn account, which I'm kind of shocked about. But yeah, that's why that's where that question was born from.
It is so easy to do. It walks you right through it very quickly, and you can, it's just, you know, click, and before you know it, you've got a LinkedIn account.
I agree. I want to transition now to kind of the job interview stage, or you can call it phase two of the whole process. And I remember very vividly my whole process of coming to Appleby College for the first time and just going through that whole process of going through the job interview. And I guess it depends on the school board or the schools. There's different, I guess, you know, number of interviews. But starting with the very first interview, for at our school, I remember it was you back in the day that I met with. And I want to know, like, how important are first impressions, like that first 60 seconds or first 5 minutes? Is that important to you specifically? And do you think that's important to other recruiters as well, that first impression, the way they look, smell, I don't know, talk? Maybe if you could comment on that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I will say it's just human nature, but first impressions are very important. So, and it's actually not even the first 60 seconds, it's the first 30 seconds. And not that we base our whole interview on that, but it's important for you as an applicant coming in for an interview that you're well prepared. So, you know, those first 30 seconds are key for you to make that first impression, and you want that first impression to be a good one. So making eye contact, you know, show your excitement when you meet that recruiter or that hiring manager who's conducting the interview. Show that excitement that you're pleased to be there. Really important, dress appropriately. You want to make sure that you're dressed appropriately for the interview, and you know, err on the side of going a little bit on, you know, making sure it's professional and overdress. Even if you feel you're better to be overdressed than underdressed, and certainly be on time. You do not want to be late for an interview. And sometimes people think by being on time, they, you know, show up far too early too. You don't want to do that either, because, you know, the recruiter will get a call from reception saying, you know, the candidate's waiting. And the last thing that you want is the candidate sitting there for 20 minutes and you're worried about that candidate, but you may be in another interview. So, you know, maybe if you're showing up early, wait in your car and then come in about 10 minutes is a good time frame to come into for an interview. Another important piece too, I would also say, is that first impression is being comfortable with small talk. You have to be able to, you know, maybe you're walking from the reception to the interview room with your interviewer. So you want to be able to have some small talk, and you want, this is an opportunity to sell yourself. Surprisingly, you may not think so, but this is an opportunity for you to sell yourself right here. So you might want to ask some questions. You may want to make some comments and say, you know, you saw the students in while waiting at reception, and it was great to see their energy, Or you may ask a question about the new AWB, the new facility center built, or you may see our pillars of strength on the wall. You may want to comment on that. You want to show your excitement, and that'll, you know, the interviewer's thinking, well, oh, wow, this person's really given some thought. They've given some, you know, they know Appleby. They've done their research.
I'm so happy that you said that, because I've been saying this to my students. I teach accounting, but we talk a little bit about business etiquette as well. And, you know, when we talk about the job interview phase, and I always say that the interview doesn't begin when you sit in the room. It starts when you walk through the doors, when you're talking to reception, when you're walking through down those hallways, right? The interview begins immediately. So I'm so happy that you emphasized that point there.
No, I was just going to say, absolutely agree with you. You want to pay attention to the receptionist, or the person may not be the one walking you down. You want to make sure you leave a good impression on that individual as well.
Now, that first interview, what exactly would you say people are looking for? I'm sure there's a bunch of boxes that you're just, it's this initial screening that we're trying to get through, right? Because obviously you're going to meet with the principal and meet with the department head and other people. But that first interview, what are you trying to accomplish in that first interview?
Yeah, so, you know, there's probably some, you know, we want to make sure that you have the competencies and the capabilities to do the job. So, you know, we're looking for, and those questions can be asked in a behavioral style interview or a situational style interview questions. So really, you know, we're looking for, do you have collaborative traits? Are you a good communicator? Are you a good listener? You know, do you care? Are you patient? And can you show empathy with students? Can you integrate technology into classroom? These are all questions that are going to come out through the interview. You know, how do you manage behavioral issues in the classroom? You know, and what are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? And then those are what we're really getting to, wanting to understand who you are. And coming to, you know, I can explain what a behavioral and questions are if you'd like as well, if for some of your listeners that don't know.
Please.
Yeah. So
please.
Absolutely. So a behavioral interview is really there to understand who you are and how you think and how you approach a real situation or a dilemma. And your answers to these questions can really help the interviewer gauge, you know, how you're going to maybe act at Appleby or act at the school that you're going to. You know, you want to make sure that you, when you're answering these questions, that you're showing good self-awareness, that you're able to grow from past experiences, that, you know, that you have a willingness to understand where you made a mistake in the past or how you've grown from that behavior. And those are important things to show the recruiter in an interview. We can talk about also, go ahead. Sorry, you had a question.
No, I was going to say, you know, you mentioned a couple of the questions there. And I remember when I was in school, our guidance department kind of helped us with, I guess, call it your standard questions that regardless of what school you go to, or I guess it wasn't school, I guess corporation that we apply to, we should all be prepping for, you know, your standard, tell me a little bit about yourself, or what are your strengths and weaknesses? There's kind of like a generic box of questions that application that you should have ready in the bank. So I guess my question for you is, I guess in the education industry for teachers, are there, I guess, any standard questions that every teacher should be prepping for and practicing at home, regardless of what school they apply to?
I wouldn't say there's, I mean, we have some what we call structured questions that we will ask. I will speak to you about some of those structured questions, and you can find a lot of them on the internet. You'll see a lot of those on, you know, what are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? What you want to make sure is you don't have canned answers to those. There's nothing worse than a recruiter on the other end listening to answers we know that you've gotten off the internet. There's nothing worse than that. So I'll give you an example. So if you're asked, you know, what are your weaknesses? You don't want to respond, well, you know, my weakness is I work too hard. I'm and we've heard those. You'd be surprised at some of the responses, you know, well, I spend too much
I care time. Too much.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to have those. Instead, what we're looking for is where you had an issue, or you didn't do so well in the past, and how you came out with the learning and what you've done to fix something. So an example could be, I really learned about how importance of classroom management was, and I seeked out one of my teachers or one of my mentor teachers and worked through it. And what you want to show what you've learned. You can talk about organization skills too. You can talk about how you've created new habits now. What we're looking for, and all recruiters are looking for, because we're not all perfect. We know that we're not, and we know you're not perfect as a candidate as well. We want to hear some of those truths. And I think that's why we sort of ask sometimes, some open-ended questions. I always like to start with an open-ended question, which is a little bit about, tell me about yourself, walk me through your resume. And the reason I do that is, one, it gives the candidate an opportunity to feel comfortable right away. And two, it's almost a bit of an icebreaker to allow them to feel relaxed. And then that way you're getting a true sense. But that also gives an opportunity for us to truly hear from the candidate's perspective what's important to them, and what they feel is, and sometimes it gives a window into who they are. My suggestion to you as candidates answering those types of questions is to stick to the job, stick to competencies, stick to abilities. Don't talk about personal issues. Like, don't talk about your personal life.
It's funny that you say that, because, the whole tell me about yourself or walk me through your resume, our guidance team coached us through kind of how to answer some of those questions too. And if you've never been coached, I find that those questions can actually be pretty challenging to answer if you actually don't know how to answer, if you know what I mean. Like, you could go on a 5-minute, 10-minute tangent talking about yourself and be like, oh, back when I was in grade 5, I won the, speech award. And I think there's, again, parameters to how you answer that question, because you're right. Like, anyone could talk about themselves forever. It's about how do you kind of keep it concise? How do you keep it, focused on the job? There is a little bit of skill involved with some of those questions, as easy as it might appear on the surface.
Absolutely. And another question I think it's an important one for your listeners to know is, why do you want to leave your current employer? And that's a hard one. What we're looking for from a recruiter point of view is, what's your motivation here? And I think the golden rule, I must say, though, is do not speak negatively about the current organization you're in. And you'd be surprised how many times people will, because they feel very comfortable and they will speak negatively. Nobody wants to hear that. What they want to hear is, you can talk about, why you're interested. It could be, career advancement. It could be leadership. It could be location. There's so many different reasons for why people are looking. So you want to stay away from the negative.
Shifting towards the, post interview. I want to talk more a little bit about kind of like teachers, like online presence. And this is one thing that Teachers College, business schools, they always really emphasize into the students' heads as to having a very clean online presence. Because let's be real here, anyone can, fake it for 30 minutes through a job interview with HR. But, you kind of start digging through some of their social media stuff and, you're like, all right, we kind of start to see people's true colors. How important is it? Like, does HR actually go through people's social media, do a quick Google search, be like, all right, cool, Ron did a great interview. Let's just do a quick Google search and see how he is online. And like, oh my goodness, like, what is he tweeting out here? Like, how important is that stuff to you? Or I guess any HR department, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I've got some thoughts and I've got some legal advice too, from an HR perspective. Looking, first of all, we don't troll people's social media. We certainly don't do that. But I think, we care for our applicants and we want to make sure that, we want to have the best employees here at the school. We know everyone's got social media out there, everything from Twitter to Facebook to Instagram to LinkedIn. Just about everyone has some sort of social presence out there. And while it's great for networking and it's great for us to use LinkedIn as a way to source candidates, and that's how we use it. Applebee will use it to post positions and to attract candidates. But we certainly do not troll or look after an interview to Google an individual. And part of that is because of legal privacy legislation as well. We don't want to fall into that where, you know, a candidate would feel that we you know, inadvertently, you know, didn't hire them for a position because we looked at their social media sites. So we stay away from that. There's also human rights legislation that prevents looking at that. So we stay completely away from that. We use social media to attract candidates and to pull resumes, but we certainly wouldn't go and troll people's Google sites or their Instagram or what have you. We're more interested in using social media as a way to attract candidates. But I will say, you should be, if you're applying for professional positions, while Applebee may not do that, I know that other recruiters do. You will find out there organizations that will do that. They will look at your social media sites and they may even ask you about
them. Interesting. I'm looking at the time here, Majella. There's a couple more questions I want to just make sure we get to. One of them being, I had an interview with one of my colleagues and one of my good friends, Corey Coltrera, back in season one on the third episode. And that whole episode was actually talking about, you know, what it's like to work at a private school, an independent school. And one of the conclusions that we came to is that a lot of teachers, maybe even new teachers or veteran teachers, they aren't really, I guess, you know, jumping towards some of the opportunities that perhaps independent schools offer, mostly because they aren't really educated in terms of what this world looks like. And some of the reasons why teachers would rather apply to the public school system are for things like perceived job security. Perhaps there's this perception that, you know, we don't get the same pension plan, or maybe we get lower pay. Maybe you can kind of just, since we have you representing HR here right now on our episode, maybe can you maybe clarify or debunk some of those myths in terms of what the independent school system can offer and how it's different or similar to the public school system?
I would love to debunk some of those myths, because I think, like you, we have a high, we have a highly engaged workforce, and that shows because people are happy and with the working environment at an independent school, and not just Applebee, other independent schools as well. And I think a lot of new teachers, and I think some seasoned teachers, would be pretty impressed. I mean, our compensation is actually higher than the Toronto District School Board, well above that. You know, we're at least, I think, 13% higher than the Toronto District School Board. So we're proud of that. We certainly offer all the benefits, the health and dental benefits that the school boards offer. We are certainly also participating in the Ontario Teachers Pension Plan, which is a huge plus. And Applebee is a matching employer, which means we match your contributions as an employee. And I think what the public school boards don't have is, if you're not a certified teacher, we do hire some non-certified teachers as well at the school. And they have the opportunity to participate in an RSP matching program as well at the school, which is a huge advantage. And I think one of the biggest draws that we have, and we keep employees here, is that we've got professional development opportunities. So we spend a lot of money on professional development for our faculty, and we really encourage growth and development. We've supported individuals with their PhDs, their master's programs, lots of
stand-up comedy.
Stand-up comedy, great, which you've done, and lots of wonderful opportunities for new teachers as well. And then I think what's a real draw to here is smaller class sizes. We've got smaller class sizes. We've got extended vacation holidays and breaks. Our campus facilities are outstanding. And we've got great life stages programs as well for people who are on maternity leave or parental leave. And we've got a fantastic recognition program, which you are a recipient of as well.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. It's a great feeling to have.
Yeah. And great career, we also have great career opportunities as well for leadership opportunities. I know in some of the public boards, if you're a department head, you know, you don't, and somebody's a department head and you're interested in that role, you have to almost wait for that person to exit. At Applebee, there's so many opportunities and the positions are on terms, which gives lots of opportunities to our teachers.
Majella, I'm just looking at the time, maybe two more questions. One more question. Let's do two questions here. Let's do a wrap-up question. What are some final, you know, high-level pieces of advice that you can give to teachers that perhaps are preparing to submit a job application or getting ready for an interview? What can you do to maybe perhaps ease some of their anxiety or get them ready for that next step?
Well, I mentioned that one thing. I think it's really important on your resume is look at the job posting. I really believe in that. And I think that'll get you in the door. But something, Ron, we didn't talk about, and we're doing it right now, is Zoom interviews. People have to be prepared for Zoom interviews. They're happening more and more now. And you want to make sure you follow everything we talked about, but in addition, that you plan well. So you want to make sure that your technical connections, you want to make sure you got the time right. You want to make sure you're still presented well, like in terms of dress. You want to make sure your background is, you know, appropriate, and you have the proper space to do that interview. These are all important things to be mindful of. And sometimes Zoom interviews are hard to gauge with individuals. So even though, you know, you may not be speaking and the interviewer is speaking, your facial expressions are important to really pay attention to. And you want to really speak really clearly and slowly and show your confidence on that call as well. So Zoom interviews are another piece that as new applicants are looking for jobs, an area to consider as well for importance.
That's a great transition to the final question. This is a small plug for Applebee College, our school over here. So for listeners maybe interested in applying to our school, which is a great school everyone should be looking into, where can listeners find job postings for Applebee College?
So head on to our app, to our website. It's a great website. So applebee.on.ca. And there's a section there, join the team for career opportunities as well. And you can also follow us on Instagram and our LinkedIn site. And we're, you know, a school that cares as well. And if you ever need accommodations, we're there to support you. And just let the Human Resources Department know. And we're happy to support any accommodations as well.
There you go, folks. Everything from job interviews to job applications and everything and anything in between. You just heard it firsthand from Majella. Majella, thank you so much for taking time out of your workday to do this today. We really appreciate it. I know how anxiety-driven sometimes some of this process can be. So to hear and look behind the curtains just a little bit, it definitely, I think, will ease some of the people's minds out there. So thank you so much for hopping on the podcast today.
That was a lot of fun. Thank you, Ron.
And thank you so much for all of our listeners for tuning in to this week's episode. If you enjoyed this week's episode, feel free to follow us at the Teacher Hotline on Instagram and on Facebook. And of course, don't forget to click that subscribe button on Apple, Google, Spotify, you name it. We'll be there. We'll see you all next week. Take care, everyone. Woo!